She's been called a 21st century daughter of Chinua Achebe, and not just because she lived in a house he once lived in. Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie burst onto the literary scene with her first novel. Another prize-winning novel followed, as did a brilliant collection of stories and a MacArthur Genius Award. Adichie splits her time between the United States and her native Nigeria. In fact, Steve Paulson caught up with her the day she was flying back to Africa. They talked about her early days as a writer.
I came to America because I didn't want to be a doctor. And I had started medical school in Nigeria and I was hopelessly unhappy. And so I wanted to flee. And so I did. And America became my salvation.
That's an interesting perspective that you had to come here so you didn't become a doctor.
And I think a lot of people from backgrounds similar to mine in many sub-Saharan African countries will identify with this. When you do well in school, they automatically sort of tell you you have to be a doctor, and you go along with it. And I did. And I realized that because I had been so immersed in the sciences, which is something else that happens when you do well in school. I mean, the general thinking in Nigeria is that the arts, the study of the arts, is for people who are just slightly less than intelligent. And for one to prove one's intelligence, one has to, you know, do the sciences, physics and chemistry and biology. And I had done this for so long and I was sick of it. I was bored with it in many ways. And I say this at the risk of sounding melodramatic, but my soul was thirsty for something different. And my sister lived in the U.S. And so I decided I am going to take the SATs, I'm going to get a scholarship, and I'm going to go to America and take classes in philosophy and politics and art. And that's exactly what I did.
Hmm. Did you know you wanted to be a fiction writer?
Oh, I've always known. Even when I had made the choice to become a doctor, my plan had been that I would become a psychiatrist and then I would use my patients' stories for my fiction.
And you had to come to the U.S. to be a novelist. That's interesting.
No, I don't think I came to the U.S. to be a novelist. I think I came to the U.S. to not be a doctor, because I would have been. I think I would have. I mean, in Nigeria, for example, before I left, I had already had a play published, a horrible play that I hope nobody ever reads. But still, it was published. And so I knew that I would write. I had planned to keep writing. I was writing when I was in medical school. But I think that what America gave me was the freedom to think about writing alone.
Americans often have stereotypes about Africa, and it works the other way too, at least in some of your stories, that there are stereotypes that Africans have about the U.S. And I'm wondering if you could read the very beginning of your title story, The Thing Around Your Neck, which gets at some of those stereotypes.
Okay. So it's a story told in the second person, the you. You thought everybody in America had a car and a gun. Your uncles and aunts and cousins thought so too. Right after you won the American visa lottery, they told you, in a month you'll have a big car, soon a big house, but don't buy a gun like those Americans. They trooped into the room in Lagos where you lived with your father and mother and three siblings, leaning against the unpainted walls because there weren't enough chairs to go around, to say goodbye in loud voices and tell you with lowered voices what they wanted you to send them. In comparison to the big car and house and possibly gun, the things they wanted were minor: handbags and shoes and perfumes and clothes. You said, okay, no problem. Your uncle in America, who had put in the names of all your family members for the American visa lottery, said you could live with him until you got on your feet. He picked you up at the airport and bought you a big hot dog with yellow mustard that nauseated you. Introduction to America, he said with a laugh. He lived in a small white town in Maine in a 30-year-old house by a lake. He told you that the company he worked for had offered him a few thousand more than the average salary, plus stock options, because they were desperately trying to look diverse. They included a photo of him in every brochure, even those that had nothing to do with his unit. He laughed and said the job was good, was worth living in an all-white town, even though his wife had to drive an hour to find a hair salon that did black hair. The trick was to understand America, to know that America was give and take. You gave up a lot, but you gained a lot too. He showed you how to apply for a cashier job in the gas station on Main Street, and he enrolled you in a community college where the girls had thick thighs and wore bright red nail polish and self-tanner that made them look orange. They asked where you learned to speak English and if you had real houses back in Africa and if you had seen a car before you came to America. They gawped at your hair. Does it stand up or fall down when you take out the braids? They wanted to know. All of it stands up. How? Why? Do you use a comb? You smiled tightly when they asked those questions. Your uncle told you to expect it. A mixture of ignorance and arrogance, he called it. Then he told you how the neighbors said, a few months after he moved into his house, that the squirrels had started to disappear. They had heard that Africans ate all kinds of wild animals.
That's wonderful. Thank you. So is much of that drawn from your own life, or is that more just what you came up with as a fiction writer?
I think that the idea of coming up with, I mean, one comes up with things from something, right? So in this story, this character has a rather horrible uncle. And no, I didn't have that. I had a very kind sister. But the details are based, I mean, I did have people who asked me in Alam where I had learned to speak English because I had come from this African jungle. It was quite surprising to me just to realize that people didn't have this conception of sort of the urban Africa, that there are lots of countries in Africa in which people live in urban areas. And it just didn't seem to be something most Americans I knew at the time were aware of. That detail about the squirrels, for example, which I found hilarious, actually did happen to my sister's husband.
Oh, really? Huh.
When he first came to the US and moved into this sort of small suburban area. And he says that one of the neighbors came up to him and said, you know, people are saying that since you moved in, the squirrels have been...
Even if they thought that, it's hard to believe they'd actually tell him that.
But, you know, I had a lot of respect for this woman who told him that. And, you know, I thought, well done to you. And then he said that it made him feel horribly self-conscious.
I know there are some people, I don't know if this is still so much a debate now as it was a couple of decades ago, about what language certain Africans should write in, particularly Nigerians, where, you know, often you're exposed to, you grow up with several different languages, including English, but English is also the language of the colonizer to some degree. Was that ever sort of an issue for you?
It seems to me a dated thing. I do get it sometimes, but often I do events and somebody who's in their 60s will sort of get up and start beating what I consider really rotten, not only dead, but rotten horse. I feel that English is mine. I grew up speaking both English and Igbo at the same time, and I consider both my first languages. And because English is our official language, what it meant was that I was educated entirely in English in Nigeria. And not only was I educated entirely in English, in many ways, we weren't encouraged to study our own languages. The study of Igbo, for example, was considered very uncool. I remember insisting on taking classes in Igbo, and it was just considered completely uncool to do that. Nobody encouraged you. And at some point, actually, in primary school, to speak what was called the vernacular in school could get you into trouble. And so the result, of course, is that lots of Nigerians of my generation cannot read or write in their languages. I mean, often they can speak, but they can't read or write in them. And what it means then, of course, is that there isn't much sort of literary output in those languages. And while for me this is sad, but at the same time, I think that English has become ours, that, you know, that one should be allowed a certain level of agency. Yes, it was the colonizer's language, but we've taken it and we've done things with it and it's become ours.
Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie talked with Steve Paulson. Her collection of stories is called The Thing Around Your Neck.